From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of May, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global analytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions will join us. Eric will discuss the weather forecast for this week, next week, and the growing regions of the Corn Belt right into the summer months. And we'll do all of that on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. A quick reminder that we will have a program on Monday, though it is Memorial Day, and the markets are closed from now until then. They'll reopen again on Monday evening.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, July corn today up a quarter cent, finished at 318. December, 332 and three quarters, down a quarter. The March, a quarter lower as well, at 345 and a quarter. July soybeans, a penny and three quarters lower at 833 and a quarter. And November contract at 844 and a half, down one. January, 848 and a half, a penny lower. Bean oil futures down 47 cents. The bean meal up $1.60. Soft red winter wheat. July contract, the harvest month, down 7 1/4 cents at 508 and three quarters. The hard red at 444 and a half, a dime lower for the day. Live cattle futures in the June, $1.10 lower for 100 pounds at $97.70. August at 97.32 and a half, down 90 cents. The August feeder cattle, 7 1/2 lower at 128.80. And lean hogs in the June at 58.77 and a half, down 57 and a half cents. Crude oil, 61 cents lower a barrel. Ethanol futures down 0.4 cents. Heating oil is down 9 9/10 cents. And the natural gas for the day, 0.2 cents higher on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up just about 2 points. The U.S. dollar up 0.38. And the gold futures for the afternoon trading up $6.10. Mike Zuzula, globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss what happened in the marketplace for the day and the week. Good holiday weekend to you. I think I'm going to start now. How about you?
Yes, I think it's time to go. And before we get too deep into it, a big thank you to all the veterans and those who lost their lives for our sakes. We cannot forget and never will forget everything they've done for us. It's just a great holiday to stick some flags out and think about what we have, Todd. And I'm not putting on a soapbox or anything. It's just a very meaningful time for us as Americans, especially with this pandemic, I think.
It is indeed Memorial Day, a time to remember all of those who have fallen in the service of the United States of America. In Chicago today, wheat futures were lower, and there were some numbers that came out of the Kansas wheat tour. Did you get a look at those?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, if you don't know much about what Todd and I talk about when it comes to wheat and how wheat's the leader, I think wheat put on a clinic this week, Todd, in terms of why it is a leader. And that's because we saw Russia's crop lowered. We renewed a threat in the Black Sea in terms of increased problems with weather. The European Union is barely getting enough rain. We've seen a pickup, not a big pickup, but a pickup nonetheless in wheat exports here for the United States. And up until Thursday's trade, we had a weaker dollar. And then we also had what you're talking about is the hard red wheat tour and for the state of Kansas, the wheat associates coming in. I think it was around a 280 million bushel Kansas wheat crop, 284 versus USDA's 305 million number. Those numbers seem very likely to me to be accurate if we get some rains, but I think that number could go down if we don't get rains in the next 10 days, because we're going to start heating up. But the hard red wheat actually closed down about 2 cents this week, and the soft red wheat was able to stay up about 8 1/2. I think that was mainly due to corn and beans. But the reason the hard red wheat couldn't manage to find support with all that good news was, I think, its issue with the leadership of wheat being so currency driven. And the Russian ruble, I'll throw out too, Todd, was able to make a 10-week high this week earlier before China announced their shift in policy and security with Hong Kong.
Is this currency driven because it is traded into so many different countries?
Yeah, that's the primary reason. And I think also you have a situation where you also had a very supportive feature in the market from the energy markets. And the energy markets in New York tend to trade very opposite to the U.S. dollar because of the London Brent crude oil market being traded in euros. And so I think you have a situation here where it was almost all currency driven. And I would say interwoven in that is the fear that we're going to go into a global recession because of U.S.-China trade ties coming in and being worsened at a time where we're very, very vulnerable just as we start to come out of COVID.
I did see during the Chinese legislative session that they talked about trying to stay the course with phase one, though they always include a sentence or two that says, as long as it is beneficial to the Chinese and the right market strategy.
Yeah, and I don't think it helped at all that they canceled such a large chunk of pork sales on the weekly numbers and turned the whole pork sale for the week net negative. Mr. Pompeo picked up on that today by talking about the phase one and talking about what's going on with China and Hong Kong. When I saw that net negative number in China canceling over 12,000 metric tons of our pork sales that they had bought previously, I thought this is not going to go well for the U.S.-China phase one talking points.
They have a long holiday weekend to think it through. Will things change next week?
I think they have the chance to if the weather models continue to promote still dry weather in the western corn belt and the hard red wheat belt and too wet in the central and eastern corn belt. I think south of Champaign and as you go east of Champaign and slightly west of Champaign to roughly Springfield, Jacksonville, and then you go north up towards Rochelle and I-80, you've got a lot of water holes out there that are going to be an issue if you folks out in that area get another 2-3 inches of rain the next 2 or 3 days. And then we have, you know, a pretty big hole of drought in Nebraska and Kansas, and it's kind of snaking into Iowa. That could be relieved with these weekend systems, but I think it'll be a weather trade when we come back from the holiday, and obviously we'll always be looking at the dollar.
Well, we'll be past Memorial Day. I guess it's time to start thinking about the weather. Early enough, though, planting, except for the last, 20% or suppose of corn is done. Beans would be a different story.
Yeah, and I think emergence could be a story as well because that goes back to, or maybe later down the road, harvested acres. But I think you bring up a good point. It's getting harder and harder once we get into July to generate that weather supply-driven rally that gives us chances to hedge into profitable territory. So we got to really be on our toes here.
Anything on the livestock side?
Well, the cattle on feed report numbers are out. I haven't looked at them yet, though. I did notice that we're almost at $1,000 a head when it comes to beef processing right now per head. There, packers are making almost $1,000 a head on beef. So we should continue to increase those supply and those shelves should start to get filled up more and more in the grocery stores with that kind of incentive.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Happy holidays.
Same to you. That is Mike Zuzlo at GlobalAnalytics.biz. Well, there's a brand new article dealing with CFAP, or the direct payment related to coronavirus, that farmers will be signing up for starting next Tuesday at their local FSA office. Gary Schnitke and Company took a look at the features of this particular program and detail them at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. That'll stay there all the way through mid-morning, probably on Tuesday. You'll get a chance to look at it. Gary, however, this morning joined us on the Farm Doc Daily Live webinar, and you can view that up on our website right now at willag.org. In the first 5 minutes, he talks about those CFAP payments and the details of how they will be made. Here is an excerpt.
Just a couple notes here. There's a $250,000 payment limit and a $900,000 AGI test as well. The CFAP payments for crops, there were a lot of details released on this. We're just going to go through a simple example here. Again, you will begin to be able to sign up for this program next week. Overall, though, for corn, there will be a 33.5 cent payment based on the lower of 2019 production. So 2019 production, 50% of that, or the lower of that, or unpriced inventory on January 15th. So if we had a farm that produced 200 bushels of corn last year, the maximum payment that they could be received on is 100 bushels. And if we have 140 bushels in inventory on January 15th, that's unpriced, we'll get paid on 100 bushels maximum, which will work out to be $33.50 per acre. And that will come in two installments, $26.80 or 80% of that, and then a second payment of $670 later if the funding exists. So those, that's the basic details of the crop program. There is also substantial payments for cattle, hogs, and dairy. They will be paid on sales between January 15th and April 14th, and then paid on the highest inventory number between the dates of April 16th to May 14th. So there for slaughter cattle, for example, if we sold some cattle on January 15th to April 14th, that'll be paid at $214 per head rate, and then any inventory at a $33 rate. You can see that there are payments that are also for hogs. So a segment of the hog industry will receive some payments. There is also a payment on milk production, $618 per hundredweight.
That was Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. If you'd like to learn more about the CFAP payments, you can do that online at the Farm Doc Daily website right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And on Tuesday morning at 7 a.m. next week, Gary Schnitke, Nick Paulson, and Jonathan Kappas will hold a webinar talking about farm policies, including the CFAP payments, and really digging into some of the things that you probably have questions about, like HTAs as they're related to the potential for CFAP funding. You can sign up for that one on the Farm Doc Daily website. The webinar is at 7 a.m. on Tuesday morning next week, or it might be easier just to register at go.illinois.edu/FD. That stands for Farm Doc. It's go.illinois.edu/FD. On this Friday afternoon, let's check in with Eric Snodgrass to see what's up with the agricultural weather forecast. Kind of a temperature change coming, in the process right now, in fact, although we probably ought to look back at those heavy rains first. What'd you see?
Well, the problem was the rains that did come through weren't just heavy. I mean, they were absolutely torrential. And so the system that has been plaguing us with this cooler wetter weather we've been having, when it came through, it added on to some already big time rainfall totals across central Illinois. And once it did, it really striped the United States from Texas to Michigan with heavy rainfall. Michigan, as you've been hearing about in the news, dealing with some major, major flooding. Well, that same system is now sitting over, sat yesterday over parts of Tennessee and Kentucky, and continued to add to the major flooding problems that were happening in the Appalachian Mountains in North and South Carolina and Virginia. So we've been on the back side of that, and we finally shook off the cloud cover yesterday on Thursday. And today it feels more like what we would expect the end of May to feel like, and the temperatures are starting to rebound. But with the rebounding temperatures that we're going to be getting, we do have for our Memorial Day weekend some thunderstorm threat as we kind of press forward with things.
So I got a question about the summer, because we have some rainfall coming in. We need about an inch a week in June, July. Maybe that in August as well, but certainly in June and July to have a good crop. Have you been thinking about what the rainfall next week really means and if it portends anything for the future?
Yeah, well, the rainfall that is coming up out of the south right now. So we're looking at a 1 week forecast here from central Texas through Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, you know, getting into Missouri, the western Corn Belt and parts of the central Corn Belt. That heavy rainfall that is coming through there is going to be hitting some already very saturated ground. Now, it's got a couple of different, you know, ways to think about it. One, that means that any chance of getting drought to develop in that area through the month of May is now squashed. So that's good. We don't want drought in that area in May, especially not in June. But we do need the heat to come back in so that we can dry this out and get back in fields and get stuff done. You know, I was talking to a colleague this morning. One of the things we often say is, you know, it actually comes from potato farmers out in Idaho. They say, you know what we do with our crop is we love to bake it in May and let it cool off in July. And so getting that early season heat in May and June is good. In fact, statistically, we correlate better yields with hotter and slightly drier Junes as long as the July rain comes in. So when we look out that far, that's the big question, right? What do we end up getting as we move towards summer? And NOAA just released its forecast yesterday for summer, and they are calling for, you know, near average to above average precipitation for much of the Corn Belt in central U.S., and they're calling for near average temperatures for June, July, August. Any would-be heat and drought situation may possibly wait until later in the year, maybe into this fall when we're dealing with maybe a bit stronger of a La Nina at that time. So there's a lot to be on the lookout for. But what I just told you is at least good moving forward. It's better than what I've had to be conveying here over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, check in on South America for me.
Yeah, so in South America, they're trying to, of course, finish up the Safrinha crop. And the northern growing areas from Mato Grosso to Minas Gerais, the Tocantins, Bahia, that area is having a decent finish to the season overall. No major heat stress, of course, and then it's not getting cold too fast there. And while they're normally running out of their monsoonal rainfall, it's right about harvest. But it's the southern growing area we're concerned about, specifically Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul. Those two areas, especially Rio Grande do Sul, as we've been talking about, have had major drought. Now, they got big rains coming in now. The question is the damage already done? And most folks I talk to, they say yes. And so this rain doesn't come through and just correct all the problems, but it certainly doesn't make things worse. What's interesting is behind it, this front that's sweeping through there, we've got some colder temperatures. And I don't think we're going to hit a very, very early frost down there, but seeing the temperatures get down into the possibly the upper 30s, maybe even a little bit below that, is of concern. I'm going to watch it all weekend to see if they do over the weekend and early next week get into those cold temperatures. So southern Brazil really struggling as they finish out a growing season.
Let's go to the other side of the planet where I think the soils in Ukraine may have a moisture content problem at this point.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been watching the soil moisture values as well, and I do it primarily using some satellite data. And you're right, it's not as though the whole of Ukraine is sitting on, you know, good moist black soil right now. And instead, they've got some patches of drought. We just had released to us some new data from the European model that looks out through the month of June, and the European went over to a drier forecast for them in June. So given that they didn't have the wettest start to the season and a forecast for a dry June, I think we just need to be on the lookout for some possible regional drought development in Ukraine. And I think this is going to be one of those years where our international weather story is going to be a major component of what drives our markets. So I think we need to keep talking about Ukraine every Friday to see how they continue to progress through their growing season as well.
We can do that. Hey, thanks so much. And we'll talk with you again next Friday.
Sounds good, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible.